This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, managing editor here at Texas Scorecard. We're going to talk about some of the big stories across the state of Texas this week, where you know, there's been a lot of, there's a lot of warm temperatures across the state of Texas, but it's cold and snowy here in 1836 Studios. Joined today with Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent here, to talk about some of the big stories here. The first one is that, you know, as we're looking on the calendar, right, you've got Christmas coming up, there's New Year's, but we've actually got one important date that just passed us on Monday, and that is the filing deadline for the March 2022 primaries. Essentially, anybody who wants to be on the ballot next year had to have filed by Monday. And you know, there's a few really interesting key takeaways from all that.
Sure. I think the biggest takeaway is that almost all of the statewide elected officials have multiple primary election challengers. Keep in mind, of course, all statewide elected officials currently are Republicans. It's been that way for almost two decades. And almost all of them have multiple primary.
Yeah, challengers. I mean, we've certainly talked a lot over the last 6 months or so about the primary challengers to Governor Greg Abbott, who is seeing some real challenges inside the Republican primary. But, you know, it's like every statewide office. It's lieutenant governor. It's agriculture commissioner. Even comptroller Glenn Hager looked like he was going to maybe skate in without an opponent. And even he got an opponent. And I'm just wondering, is this a normal thing to see? Is it normal to have these many candidates on the top of the ballot?
Sure. I kind of looked back at that. I mean, there's normally primary challenges, but I would say there's not as many, right? Like you don't have the gubernatorial candidate receiving seven, you know, Republican primary challengers, right? To include also the general election, right? He's got multiple Democrats, multiple independents filed. I mean, there's a whole list of names for people that have paid the money, right, to run for governor. Same with lieutenant governor and all of them. You know, you've got now an open seat for land commissioner because Commissioner George P. Bush is running for attorney general. And that race started very early back in June, right? You had a candidate announced for that, and Senator Dawn Buckingham. And, you know, I'm sure she thought announcing that early, you know, I might get enough support early on, and she's got multiple people. She's
like
running
eight people or something in that race, right? And so you're really kind of seeing this, but it's not even just the statewide. So I really do feel you look at the list of people who have filed this time, and you see a lot of particularly liberal and moderate Republicans in the Texas House, and the Texas legislature facing major challenges from the right, and in many cases facing multiple challengers from the right.
That's right, absolutely. You've got Travis Clardy, Representative House District 11 out in Nacogdoches. You've got Ernest Bales, House District 18 out in Southeast kind of Texas Liberty County area. You've got Kyle Cassell, right, College Station area. All three very liberal Republicans by anyone's estimation. These are people that supported expanding Medicaid, for instance, right? Something contrary to their own party's platform, and they've all got two or three primary challengers.
Well, you've been seeing people like Valerie Swanson, people like Lacey Hull in the last kind of weeks of the filing deadline, receiving opponents. And, you know, I think there's a commentary here, which is to say that, you know, these seats are not going to be taken for granted, right, by these incumbents, right? A lot of these people are going to have to actually campaign. And from a citizen's perspective, this can only, I think, be seen as a positive movement.
Sure. A good example is, you know, Representative Stephanie Click, House District 91 up there in the Fort Worth area. She's got four, I believe, primary challengers this go around, right? And this is something that someone we talked about for several months now, right, is certainly at the kind of the center of the gender modification issue, right? And of course, her primary opponents are running certainly on that issue. You've got Dustin Burroughs, who was involved in that, picked up a last minute primary challenger out in West Texas, right? I mean, it certainly seems like activists, if you will, are somehow getting involved in this and coming around.
Yeah, certainly. And so we've got early voting, it's kind of just around the corner, honestly. It's February 14th. That's Valentine's Day, right? February 14th. Take your Valentine and go early vote. February 14th through the 25th. And then Election Day is March 1st. And so, you know, we're gonna be really hitting the races once we hit the new year on those.
Sure.
But speaking of elections, we've got a new court decision out from the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. This is the state's highest criminal court. saying that the Texas Attorney General actually lacks the constitutional authority to prosecute election fraud. Now, folks may notice as we've gone through the last year, the last session or two, and have passed various pieces of election integrity legislation, a lot of that revolves around the Attorney General being given the power by the legislature to prosecute cases of election fraud. Well, this new hearing actually says that's not really constitutional. That there's actually a separation of powers. The Attorney General cannot do that. Only local district and county attorneys can do that. And, you know, that issue is a problem because on one hand, from a separation of powers, a limited government perspective, seems like a good thing.
Sure.
The more immediate effect here, though, is that a lot of these district and county attorneys are, you know, funded by George Soros. They maybe have no interest in investigating some of the election fraud that's happening in their little fiefdoms.
That's right. I mean, where we've seen the fraud, and fraud, of course, does exist, we'll continue to say, where we've seen that is literally in these fiefdoms, as you call them, where there are these extremely liberal DAs and county attorneys who likely wouldn't prosecute these anyway.
Yeah. And so, you know, people have been talking about, well, what's the solution? Immediately, you've seen people saying right now, well, we need a fourth special session. We need the legislature to come in. You can fix this by passing a constitutional amendment that requires 100 votes,
right,
or two-thirds of the House, two-thirds of the Senate to approve that, and then it would go to voters. The question is right now, you know, that's just kind of another item on the list of issues that people are calling on the governor to call for a special session for, which, you know, to date does not seem like something he's really willing to do.
I think it's a mixture of that, as well as, let's say there was a fourth special session on the issue. Is there the political appetite, at least especially in the House, right, where you need the 100 votes, to your point, where we saw in the most recent omnibus election integrity fight that caused the quorum bust, everything was a partisan exercise, right? Mm-hmm. All of the votes were perfectly partisan split. So even in the event you had a special session, would you be able to do something like this?
Right, and certainly raises the question. On one hand, you have to think that if you're the governor, if you're somebody who's in a position of power, that potentially you could force, you know, to get the votes. I mean, we've seen cases where the governor, the party in charge, has gotten the votes on areas where you wouldn't think that they would be. But it's hard to get the votes if they're not even here in session, right? You don't even know. So certainly another issue that we've seen folks calling for another special session on. Another issue, of course, the main driver, I think, in a fourth special session calls has been vaccine mandates, a topic we've talked a lot about. And you've had a series of articles now talking about some real chaos going on in the Texas military.
That's right. So Texas Military Department is something that's overseen by Governor Greg Abbott. This is extremely nuanced, so I'll try to kind of keep this 30,000 foot level, if you will, on this. But the biggest takeaway is, despite messaging from both Governor Abbott, Republican legislative leadership to the saying, you know, oh, we're waiting on courts, or look at this court decision, this was great on employer vaccine mandates. The truth is, all the while this was all happening, the Texas Military Department was, in fact, enforcing vaccine mandates that were bestowed upon them by the Department of Defense, requiring that both Air National and Army National Guard service members receive a COVID vaccine by a particular date. And if they don't, they have to jump through specific hoops trying to seek exemptions, right? And all the while that's going on, they could be docked pay, and then they could also be forced out of their military service altogether.
So walk through the timeline here a little bit, if you can, because this is something that I thought would not happen in Texas. I thought this is something that we've seen the governor say would not happen in Texas. And yet I know that you've talked to a lot of folks. We've seen the records. You've posted the evidence that it is.
Sure. August 24th was when U.S. Department of Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin issued the first memorandum for mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations for all Department of Defense service members. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that includes auxiliaries, i.e. like the National Guard, or the Bureau of National Guard, right? This is, of course, was in the midst. Keep in mind, this is before the Biden employer vaccine mandate. We're talking about two kind of separate things. So then you had Governor Abbott the next day issue Executive Order 39, which was specifically designed to prohibit vaccine mandates and vaccine passports, right? So September 20th, the third special session begins on the agenda, right, is something for the legislature to consider to try to prevent vaccine mandates and vaccine passports. Of course, we know that special session ended. They didn't address it at all. September 27th, you had the TAG, the Texas Adjutant General, Major General Tracy North. She's who oversees the entire Texas Military mm-hmm. Department. She issued an order basically outlining how they will comply with the Department of Defense order, completely ignoring mm-hmm. Abbott's executive order. On October 4th, Abbott submitted a memorandum to Major General Tracy Norris, basically saying, hey, this executive order exists. I need you to comply with it. Mm-hmm. Again, as we've seen, we have the evidence of posted on TexasScorecard.com, completely ignored. She went on mm-hmm. to continue to administer this mandate, if you will. And then fast forward all the way until yesterday, and then Abbott submits a letter, right? Just a letter to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin saying, well, we won't comply. And I think the biggest, there's a lot of takeaways, but the biggest takeaway there is, one, we've yet to see how that letter, sure. whether or not that letter is going to do anything. But there was 115 days, mm-hmm. right, in which Abbott essentially did not do anything there to stop this before sending this letter. That's 115 days in which service members were pressured into getting a vaccine mm-hmm. to comply, or having to make this decision that, hey, I might have to leave my current livelihood. And this includes soldiers by, or service members, by the way, that are on the governor's own mission on Operation Lone Star down the border, which is only state active duty mm-hmm. orders and not federally subsidized.
Well, and you talk about this letter. I mean, not only this letter that was sent yesterday, did Governor Abbott say, look, we're not going to enforce COVID vaccine mandates mm-hmm. in Texas, but he says, he essentially leaves an out and says, right. and if they're required to, well, it's all Joe Biden's fault.
That's right.
A. And B, the other interesting thing I thought was that he says that I'm just reiterating a message that I've said for months. And, you know, as you pointed out, I mean, you look at what has happened over the last couple of months, that's just not true.
That's right. We have it. Anyone can go see them at TexasScorecard.com. We posted the orders in which that were used, that were being kind of sent down through the echelons of the Texas Military Department to units, to include the 72nd Infantry Brigade Combat Team, which is currently in charge of mm-hmm. the military portion of Operation Lone Star. Mm-hmm. It's all there, and the guidance is all there, basically lining out how they will administer the mandate. And then for service members that were seeking exemptions, how they would go about seeking a religious exemption, for instance, mm-hmm. right? They would have to be interviewed by a chaplain. Notably, the chaplain is the decider on whether or not they mm-hmm. sincerely hold a religious belief, and they make recommendations to their chain of command, right? Mm-hmm. Something that, to my knowledge, I could not find there was precedent for, on having the chaplain determine whether or not you sincerely are religious and there's an objection.
Right. And then what about just any other, what if you just don't want it? You know, that's what I'm looking at. So, we've talked about a forced special session. We've seen 26 lawmakers, right. by your latest count, and the Republican Party of Texas calling for a forced special session. I think it is important to note that we've kind of seen a little bit of a freeze on that number growing right now.
That's right. It's been a few weeks since, to my knowledge, any other lawmakers publicly come out and said they support the call for a fourth special session. Not sure why that is.
Interesting. Well, we'll be following and seeing if this changes in the coming weeks after this letter. I don't know. We'll have to see. Another problem that has been plaguing the Texas National Guard has been a lack of pay. Is the Texas military having trouble paying its service members? I spoke with Robert Montoya, who is now our investigative journalist here at Texas Scorecard, about that. Check this out. Robert Montoya, a familiar face here at Texas Scorecard, now taking a new role on as our investigative reporter. And we've got our very, very first investigation that we're going to talk about. But first, explain a little bit this new role, these new projects we're going to start seeing out of Texas Scorecard.
Oh, thanks, Brandon. Yes, I'm very humbled and honored to be joining Texas Scorecard's investigative department, where we're going to be looking to expose waste, fraud, and abuse throughout the state of Texas and our government.
And certainly no shortage of that. You know, this very interesting story here was published at TexasScorecard.com. If you haven't checked it out yet, you've got to check this out, from Robert, from an investigation showing that Texas National Guard members that were sent down to the border as part of Operation Lone Star, this project from the governor to secure the border, is how it was sold. Well, it turns out a lot of those folks may not have actually been paid.
Yeah, correct. And can you imagine, you know, working a job not getting paid by your boss?
No, I cannot.
Yeah. So in mid-October, a source within the Texas National Guard approached Texas Scorecard alleging that members of the National Guard that had been deployed as part of Operation Lone Star were not getting paid. Mm-hmm. So as part of our investigation, we sent an open records request to Texas Comptroller, and we were asking for any internal memos or communications regarding back pay or non-pay of Texas National Guardsmen. What we got back were communications where officials in the Comptroller and the Texas Military Department were trying to solve the issue of Texas soldiers not being paid.
And there's a little bit of some finger pointing too when you start to look through these records, because you're talking about the Texas Military Department. They're in charge of the Texas National Guard. But the Comptroller's Office, right, they're also involved in this.
Yes. And for those who aren't aware, the Texas Comptroller, they handle the processing of state taxpayer dollars. Mm-hmm. And where this starts is on October 18th, the commander of the Texas military, Major General Tracy Norris.
Right.
She asked Texas Comptroller Glenn Hagar for help to ensure that soldiers who were deployed as part of Operation Lone Star were, quote, are reliably paid in a timely manner. Then 4 days later, we received a communication as part of our open records request where State Representative Giovanni Capriglione contacted Hagar and said that someone had approached him within the Texas military saying that Texas soldiers aren't getting paid. And the number that he had he'd been told was that's 280.
And it's 280. I mean, how many total National Guard troops are part of this Operation Lone Star? Do we know?
So this communication was, again, 4 days after Tracy Norris on October 18th asked Hagar for help. Mm-hmm. On October 13th, it was expected that anywhere from 500 to 1,000 Texas National Guard forces were going to be deployed to Texas border counties as part of Operation Lone Star. And then 7 days after that, October 20th, Hagar, in an internal communication, said he expected the governor was going to increase it from 5,000 personnel to 10,000, but that was not something that was going to happen in the coming weeks.
So what is the status of this issue right now? Obviously, we have communications dating back to October about this. It's December right now. Is this problem being fixed? Is it being addressed?
So we asked the Texas Comptroller what's the total number of Texas soldiers that have not been paid or aren't getting paid, and has this problem been solved? They pointed us to the Texas Military Department. They said that they've given us all they're going to give us in those communications. Texas Military Department has not answered any of our questions to date, and to date neither has Governor Abbott's office. We were contacted by another source within the Texas Military Department who told us that recently, quote, is ongoing, the problem is ongoing, but it's gotten better. And he indicated that the improvement is significant.
Okay, so we are seeing some movement there, but I think it's important to note, I mean, you contacted Governor Abbott's office. I want to know this. The Texas Military Department, Texas National Guard, these are groups that answer to the governor, right? Ultimately, this would be his responsibility to see that these payments, these operations are going through smoothly, right?
Well, we are aware that, you know, the governor's office in these communications, the governor was aware of this situation. And how much the governor has actually done on this, it's unclear right now just based on the communications that we have seen.
No, we're looking forward to even more on this story and even more coming out of the investigative department. Thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you, Brandon.
Well, that's going to be an issue I know we continue to follow. Robert will continue to investigate that story and others as we launch even more projects inside our investigative department in the coming year. Again, big thank you to Robert for that. Another big project we have coming up is the Round Rock Exposed series, okay? This is a series of podcasts led by Jacob Asmussen this season, talking about what has been going on in Round Rock ISD. Now, if you don't live near Round Rock, it's a school district in Central Texas where there have been just a numerous amount of school board, essentially, shenanigans, okay? Absolute crazy stuff happening in it. But the important takeaway is it could be happening in your school. Check out this preview.
Round Rock is a suburb city north of Austin, long considered a conservative stronghold in elections and a safe community far enough away from the craziness of the state's notoriously liberal capital city. Troubling stories have recently surfaced about Round Rock ISD's officials, including abuse of power, domestic assault allegations, allowing boys and girls private rooms, offering pornographic material to children, and blocking parents from public meetings.
Because we are so committed to our principles, I mean, that's the whole reason we're there. We're not there to, for any other reason. We want to do what's best for kids. And so because of our values and our commitment to them and unapologetically working to advance them, we became targets. And I would say probably in the September timeframe, there were some events that just became intolerable.
As parents have become increasingly aware of those problems, they've begun speaking out and been met with stiff resistance by the entrenched school board. The board has even arrested parents for speaking up in defense of their kids. No, this isn't Loudoun County, Virginia. It's Round Rock, Texas. Of the seven school board members, only two have sided with parents, students, and teachers against an increasingly defiant administration. That administration has sought to punish those two members, trying to censor them and even ban them from stepping foot on the school campuses, simply for the sin of speaking out.
We received these vicious censure resolutions from the other five. And for most people, you think a censure resolution is just a slap on the wrist. And initially, that's what we thought. But soon it became clear that there were objectives, punitive objectives, in these resolutions to try to force us to resign out of humiliation.
Now, it's easy to think that, oh, this is just happening in Round Rock, that it's just these five school board members and superintendent that are defying and ignoring parents. But it's not.
Wake up and be involved. And understand that local government is where you have the most control, and that your local government is where you're going to see how, even at the state level, how the policies that they make are impacting you day to day and your children day to day.
We've all seen the headlines of school conflicts between rogue administrations and concerned parents. And the future of our republic is happening in these schools across the state. For too long, these fights have been happening behind closed doors, but not anymore. We will expose those fights by exposing Round Rock.
Exposing Round Rock. Okay, episodes 1 and 2 are going to be available on Monday. We'll be releasing the rest of the episodes during that week as well, but you're not going to want to miss it. This is an absolutely amazing project. We're really excited to bring it to y'all. Now, I want to thank everybody for watching here. I want to have got a couple announcements here. We've got applications open for our summer and fall 2022 fellowship, as well as spring 2023. You can find the application for that at texasscorecard.com/fellowship. If you or you know somebody between the ages of 18 to 25 that wants to come down here and work with us for a few months, send them that link, send them along. We'd love to chat with y'all. Texas Scorecard, by the way, is hiring. To find out some more about those opportunities, you can head to texasscorecard.com/opportunities. Want to give a quick shout out to Tom watching in Sugarland, Jana watching from Graham, Courtney watching from Weatherford, Shelby tuning in from Salado. If you have any questions later on, if you want to drop them in the comments here, be happy to answer them later. But for right now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.